Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Mike Lusheen. I'm here with Ray Mencio. That's at the Ray Mencio on Twitter. And we're NFL Rough Draft. We're here for another podcast. And tonight we're going to do something kind of cool. So last night we talked about how we released our draft board a couple of days ago. And we already have a lot of support, a lot of really smart people who just kind of wanted to get a different view on what some others thought about different prospects in the draft. And we talked a little bit about that last night. So we are going to answer a bunch of questions from our mailbag that were asked specifically by them. So, Ray, how's it going? You ready for this?
Well, phenomenal. Can't wait to get to the questions.
All right, and just real quick before we start, a little bit of news today. Nick Nelson, the cornerback from Wisconsin, we had him as a borderline top 100 pick, and then it came out that he tore his meniscus at a workout for an NFL team. It was reported today that his meniscus wasn't fully torn, and so what was once a 3 to 4 month projected recovery is now supposed to be closer to 6 weeks. That's a big deal because he's going to miss minicamp, but he should be fine, perfectly fine for training camp. I don't think that's going to get him back into the top 100. I think that he could find a home in the fourth round now. You want to comment on that real quick?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. He's a good cornerback. He's going to have a good future in the NFL. And there's good news. It's always good to hear.
All right, so let's get to the questions. First, let's start with Eric. Now, I can tell you right now, this Eric, he's smart. He knows what he's talking about. And we had a good conversation the other day about this already. But his question is, he says, I always watch a good amount of film leading up to the draft. But when I started weighing in Spark numbers, so that's an athletic rating system, my board started to look a lot more in line with what was actually happening on draft day. Are you factoring that in as well? And if so, how much does it weigh into your ratings? So, Ray, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, really, Spark has been around for a few years now. And you know, as Mike said, it's basically a way to determine the athletic ability of all the players and kind of compare them against one another. And you know, one of the things that I want to hit on is that the numbers that they use, which they do a very, very good job, they use combine numbers and then pro day numbers. Now, I've always said, you know, it's hard to compare combine and pro day numbers just because the situations are always different and the settings are different. But in terms of our rankings, I think what it really does is it just gives you a little bit more of a picture about how particular players, you know, stack up against one another athletically. And with the league being so open and speed is more important than ever, that this gives you another way to look at how a football player is also an athlete. Now, athletes aren't always good football players. Football players aren't always elite athletes. So it's a combination of in between there, what you're looking for. Certainly there's guys that are great athletes that are not good NFL players. You know, if you're going to look as an example, Stephon Diggs was 116th ranked wide receiver in 2015. So he's not, you know, he's obviously outperforms what they say his athletic ability is because there's a lot more that goes into it. So it does factor into it. You know, it gives you another, it helps look at different players, you know, and it also helps to maybe view players in a different light. You know, I didn't, you know, going into this process, DJ Moore was a receiver I liked a lot. He scored extremely high, and he's a little bit more athletic than I even realized. So that, you know, that's, you know, something that's really fun to look at.
Yeah, right. You know, it's really funny that you mentioned Stephon Diggs, because when I was talking with Eric about this, he brought up Stephon Diggs and sort of we talked about how Chris Conley had that major spark rating, but he hadn't done anything at Georgia. And I think, you know, there are still a few people who are kind of hoping Chris Conley breaks out, but it's pretty unlikely at this point. And just to add to what you said, you did a really good job of covering that, but just to add to it, you know, it's a case-by-case basis. We get to this point in the process, and all we hear about are players who, you know, ran track in high school and in college and, You know, they're running these insane 40 times at their pro days, and that's not always the most important thing. So you look back to Jarvis Landry and Keenan Allen, and those guys had some pretty subpar athletic testing ratings, but they win by running routes, and we see that that translates to the NFL. I think Calvin Ridley is another example of that. He was getting killed after the combine. He has a historically low spark rating. I believe it's in the 7th percentile or something like that. He's going to be fine. He wins with route running. So in that case, we don't consider spark as much, but it certainly has its place, especially for players who are billed as, you know, having to dominate or having to be productive because they're athletes. But that's not always the case. All right, so let's move on just so we can get to all of these. Adam S. says, can you talk a little bit about the Eagles' options at 32? All right, well, Adam, I think that, you know, first of all, congratulations if you're an Eagles fan. I think that they can go best player available. Obviously, there's all kinds of talk about Darius Geis right now. And, you know, he's going to be a popular choice in mock drafts to the Eagles. Now, if he falls there, I think there's a very good chance they take him. They can go best player available. However, they may have to trade up to get him, and I think that's a problem and something that they'll be unwilling to do because they don't pick again until the 4th round. Okay, so I think they stay put. I think Geis would make sense if he's there. I think Mike Hughes would make sense. Now, I understand that you drafted Sidney Jones, and if he gets back to 100%, he could be a Pro Bowler, and you drafted Rasul Douglas, too. Now, that was a solid pick. But Ronald Darby's only got a year left on his rookie contract. Jalen Mills gets beat deep quite a bit. I'm not a big Jalen Mills fan. So I think, you know, if a guy like Mike Hughes falls there, or maybe even Isaiah Oliver, they would be solid choices. Geis is a good pick. You know, I know Corey Clement, sort of in the playoffs in the Super Bowl, started to look like he could be the pass-catching back. But part of me wonders if the Geis stuff is a smokescreen. I wonder if Sony Michel could be in play right there. You know, why not replace the Darren Sproles role with an Alvin Kamara clone? So I think that's an option. And then I just want to get into a little bit of bonus because we like to talk about second and third day picks. I think that you're going to be looking at a punter with one of those picks early on day 3. Mike Dixon from Texas, J.K. Scott from Alabama, and Jimmy Townsend from Florida are the 3 names to look out for there. If they decide to wait until late, the 7th round, or undrafted free agent, the guy I really like is Joe Davidson, punter from Bowling Green. He was at the Shrine Game. Ray, do you want to talk a little bit about the Eagles?
Yeah, in pick 32, you know, again, to your point, you know, there's been a lot of Geis talk, and also this roster's loaded. You know, they are set up to be very good again this year and in the future. But if you want to talk about so I do think that best player available is a viable option. I do. If I'm going to give you 2 guys that we could go off the board a little bit to be a little bit different here. One of which is Mike Gesicki, the tight end from Penn State. Eagles love their tight ends. And, you know, Zach Ertz is a very, very good tight end. He's one of the top 3 or 4 tight ends in the game. But they lost Trey Burton in free agency and Brent Celek's gone. They brought in Richard Rodgers, but Richard Rodgers is somewhat of a ho-hum receiver. So they like to use multiple tight ends. Excuse me, a tight end. They used to like to use multiple tight end sets. And Gesicki is probably the best pass catcher. He's not a great blocker. But you could also look for, you know, Hayden Hurst or Dallas Goedert if they're there as well. Again, that's not a position of need by any stretch. It's a position of luxury and something that can help create a bunch of mismatches. And the other position that I would look at is defensive end. Yes, they just traded for Michael Bennett, but Michael Bennett's nearing the end of his career. Chris Long could retire. He might have another year left in him. And Derek Barnett and Brandon Graham are very, very good defensive ends. But, you know, adding another defensive end, you know, with Bennett and Long's future beyond 2018 still up in the air, you got a guy like Josh Sweat who could sneak into the end of the first round, who's got a ton of athletic ability and was used in very different and odd ways at Florida State. So, again, you know, those are 2 that are just a little bit off the board just to get your mind going.
Yeah, Ray, and, you know, with Gesicki and Sweat, I think, you know, one thing I meant to mention was trading down, I think, has to be a big option for them. So I think both of those guys would be targets if they happen to do that a little bit. And I like that you mentioned tight end. I also meant to mention on day three, fourth round, Chris Herndon is an option if they want to replace Trey Burton. I like Will Dissly and Dalton Schultz sort of as maybe Brent Celek replacements. So moving on. Star says, thank you for all the hard work. Star, thank you for the support. We appreciate it. So I'd like your thoughts on Jordan Howard. Is there any chance Chicago moves on from him through trade? I have a friend in Chicago who says the local chatter is that he will be a draft pick-related trade during the draft. Seems far-fetched to me, but I do get that Jordan is terrible as a receiving option. So thoughts? So I'll take this one, and you were right. It was a little bit far-fetched because Jordan Howard was reassured today that he's not going to be traded, so he'll be staying put. Now, this is complete speculation, but I'm guessing what happened was they shopped him. Remember, Jordan Howard is from the previous regime, and he's got 2 years left on his deal. He's a solid player. You know, like you said, he's not great as a receiver, but he's a solid player, and he's got 2 years left on his rookie deal. He counts less against the cap than Tariq Cohen, believe it or not. So that's got value. I think, you know, and we could talk about the salary cap. That would be a whole half an hour show, so I can't go too much into that right now. But the fact that he counts so little, I think that the trade value you'd be looking at would be about pick 102 to the Buccaneers, about that range. And the Buccaneers would have been a team that makes sense. And I think what probably happened was it probably didn't get very far because the teams that they talked to were probably just really impressed with the depth of running backs in this class. Okay, because if you trade pick 102, say, for Jordan Howard, well, that's fair. You're getting 2 years of a solid running back, but at the same time, that could be, you know, Royce Freeman for 4 years for cheap. And, you know, he could be just as good. So I don't think that went very far. He's not going anywhere. I wish I could talk more about that, and we'll definitely talk more about the salary cap at a later point and how that affects trades in the NFL. So, Ray, I'm going to start you off. Brian K. has two questions. We're going to do both of them.
Hey.
So,
I'm just going to comment on the Jordan Howard thing, is that Matt Nagy still said, though, that he's going to use multiple running backs. So while they reassured him that he'll be in the lead role, I still wouldn't be shocked if somebody comes knocking on draft day, let's say they didn't get their running back in day one or two, and say, hey, we'll give you a fourth-round pick. Now, salary cap-wise, it doesn't make sense. They don't really have a viable option because Tariq Cohen is not an every down back. But I just wouldn't be surprised because, like you said, they're from the old regime. We usually see a lot of turnover. Jordan Howard is fairly limited in what he can do. If someone comes up and says, we'll give you a fourth this year and next year, they might jump at it. So it is interesting to watch whenever you have a changeover. But his salary cap number is very low, but they're not really that close to the cap anyway. So.
Right. Okay, so let's move on. So Brian K., he's got two questions. We're going to answer both of them. It says, what position did you find to be most difficult to slot on the board this year and why? Ray, I'm going to let you handle that one.
For me, it's been offensive tackle. It's a weak position, so I think that generally when we're going to see positions that are a little bit weaker, we're going to have tougher times figuring out who goes where because just out of need, you know, we're going to see teams jumping up and grabbing players. One example of that is Colton Miller, who I think he has a long way to go. We could see him going in round one. But I think that in a lot of years, he'd be closer to, you know, around three or four offensive tackle, but we could see him as going as high as one. So that makes me a little nervous. Also, edge rushers, because there's a lot of injury history there. You know, we've seen a guy like Arden Key be very up and down. You got a guy like Sam Hubbard who has a really, really good three-cone drill at the combine but runs a slow 40. Bradley Chubb had a bad three-cone drill, which usually is indicative of his explosiveness. And then you've got Marcus Davenport who hasn't had a ton of really competition-wise, Texas San Antonio. And then you've got Harold Landry who's you know, been battling injuries for his senior season. So the offensive tackles and edge for me were the toughest.
All right. So, yeah, just one quick note there, just in case you guys aren't aware. I know many of you are. But three cone drill that Ray is referencing, it's very, very important for edge players, cone drills. All right, so Brian's second question is, what position do you think has the most variance among team big boards this year and why? Well, you know, I think there's always going to be variance amongst different positions just because different teams have different schemes and they look for different types of players. One example, let's take a look at wide receivers and let's shrink it down to just the second round. Okay, so let's say you are looking for a burner, okay, someone to stretch the field. DJ Chark's there. He makes plenty of sense. It's a good pick. If you want more of a route runner, you've got Anthony Miller. He's going to be in that range. Let's say you want a slot receiver. Christian Kirk makes sense. If you want a bigger red zone threat, well, you've got Cortland Sutton there from SMU. He makes sense. Four players, all receivers, all projected to go in the second round. And depending on what the individual team is looking for in a receiver, you know, the order in which those guys go could be all over the place. And I'll just throw one other guy in there. You know, say you're a team like the Steelers who wants to get Antonio Brown away from returning punts before he gets killed back there, you know, and maybe add another player at the position at receiver. They draft a lot of them. Dante Pettis could make sense because of his return ability. So there's a lot of variance at different positions, but that's just a quick example. Ray, I'm going to give you the next question so we can get through some more of these, all right? So, Joseph A. First of all, Joseph A. is another guy really knowledgeable. I've talked to him a bit on Twitter and, you know, also, you know, really supportive. So thank you for that, Joseph. And, you know, I love this first question. Ray, you're going to love this too. Says, Josh Allen, what's the deal? Been a 50% passer since high school. Where is the hype coming from? Okay, your board says you see it too, meaning our board, and we do. So, Ray, Josh Allen, go.
I've been a very big opponent to Josh Allen for quite some time. This is 2 years in the making. Ever since last year when this idea came out that he was going to be one of the top quarterbacks in this draft, I started following him closely, and what I can tell you is he is very inaccurate. Everyone wants to say, oh, 56%, that's, you know, he didn't play with good players. And there's always an excuse. So one of the excuses we hear all the time is John Elway and Dan Marino completed about 56% of their passes when they were in college. Well, you know what? That was 30 years ago, so it's time to not use them as an excuse. Then we hear he didn't play with good players. Well, if you go back and look at his 2016 roster, there's some pretty solid players because those guys are playing in the NFL, like Brian Hill and Tanner Gentry. And, you know, taking, again, in the competition he's facing is not SEC competition and guys who are going to be first-round defensive players either. So that's not a valid excuse. You know, Josh Allen's hype comes strictly from that he has an absolute cannon. He has maybe the strongest arm of any prospect ever. Now, the difference between him having an incredibly strong arm and a lot of these other guys, even like Baker Mayfield and Josh Rosen, having really strong arms, just not the strongest arm ever, they're so much more accurate. So I think what you have in Josh Allen is you have some people who believe that they have this prototypical big athletic quarterback who's got a cannon for an arm, and they're going to develop him into being a superstar. However, guys just do not translate when they're inaccurate. It's the same thing in all sports. If you are inaccurate, you could practice and practice and practice. You are not going to become an elite and accurate passer. And he doesn't have the athletic. He is athletic. Don't get me wrong. However, he's not Deshaun Watson or Cam Newton athletic ability where he's going to be able to compensate for that those inaccuracies. I've said it. I've been on record saying, no, Mike and I disagree slightly in terms of where we would take him if we were a general manager. I wouldn't take him until day three. I just wouldn't. He's a project. If you can't complete passes, you're going to turn the ball over way too much, and you're going to end up on the bench, and you're going to end up losing games, a la Kyle Bowler, a la Jake Locker. You know, these guys just don't develop into quality starters. Now, he could have a very good career as a backup, but I just do not see him as a starter. I just, and I, you know, there's a lot of hate for Josh Allen, so I feel a little bit bad for him because I think that other people have made him into being something he's not. But he is going to struggle in the NFL, and he does not process, and he does not read quickly. And he had more pass attempts in the 0 to 5 yard range than any of the other top tier quarterbacks in this class. So, I mean, I'll get off my pedestal now and let you comment on Josh Allen.
Yeah, no, you know, I think you just about covered it. I take him in the second round because I think he'll play in the league for a while. He's not going to win you Super Bowls, and I don't think he'll win a lot of playoff games, but he could be a backup or a fringe starter, sort of like a more athletic Kerry Collins, in my opinion, which I'm not taking in the first round. But I'm with you and Joseph on that. We have to move on. Joseph's second question says, have you ever had any prospects you did reach out to you, positive or negative? Joseph, this is one of the coolest things about this. We've had a lot of them over the years. You know, I remember Connor Barwin telling us that we were asking the same questions that the scouts asked him at the combine. I think even just this year alone, we probably had 20, 25 prospects reach out to us. You know, Tanner Crew's dad, Dylan Cantrell's dad. It's really cool. It's always positive. You know, we try not to really kill prospects despite what Ray said. If we don't like guys, we give our reasoning and we kind of move on. All right, so John T. says, which way do you see the Vikings going at number 30, or do you think they might trade out of the round to grab some more picks? So I'm just going to take this real quick. I think they'll stay put. And Sam N. also, a similar question. He says, what would you estimate are the chances that Isaiah Wynn falls to the Vikings at 30? So I'm going to kind of combine these two questions. I think that they will stay put. I think the offensive line makes a lot of sense. If you're looking for Isaiah Wynn, I think that he's got about a 40% chance of being there. I think it's going to come down to whether or not a team who needs an interior lineman before they pick wants Will Hernandez or Isaiah Wynn. They're ranked very closely together. Another factor is going to be whether or not a team takes a center. Hey, Billy Price or James Daniels can come off the board in front of one of these guys. So I think there's a chance Isaiah Wynn is there. I think either Wynn or Hernandez have a decent chance of being there. And I think that this is probably the highest point Connor Williams can go too, because a lot of teams are viewing him as a guard. He's got a chance to maybe play tackle. That might be something that the Vikings are interested in my opinion. Just moving on down the road for them too. I'm almost positive when our final mock comes out in the third round, we're going to be looking either Nyheim Hines, Kalen Ballage, or Jalen Samuels. All three of those guys would be – they're a little bit different, but they're all basically replacements for Jerick McKinnon, which I think they could use. I have a couple other notes here on the Vikings too. So the 3-6, one thing I feel strongly about there, it's a really strong class for cornerbacks, especially late, and I think that they should take a chance – with a couple of those sort of late-round slot corners, maybe like a Chandon Sullivan or a Dietrich Nichols, or maybe even Avante Maddox probably won't be there, but those types, or Danny Johnson. So, Ray, I know you didn't really get a chance to comment on the Vikings, so I'm going to let you talk about the Cowboys. Jack B. says, I'm a Cowboys fan and see lots of mocks selecting Leighton Vander Esch. Lots of people really dislike him, but two good analysts. Talks about Dane Brugler, really good. And Tulls thinks he's solid. What's the floor versus ceiling in your opinion? Is he boom or bust, or is he a safe pick?
I feel like he's – I'm going to go with kind of in the middle of the road. Maybe that's taking the easy way out. I feel like he's a fairly safe pick. I don't think his ceiling is as high as some people want it to be. You know, I've seen him compared to, like, Brian Urlacher. You know, we're talking about a great – athlete. This kid is, he came in as a walk-on, weighing 215 pounds. I think he weighed in at the combine in 254, I believe it was, maybe, you know, around that range. That's probably an ideal playing weight. He's got speed. He's got quickness. He could cover tight ends. He could cover running backs. The knocks on him right now, there's been a rumor out there that a lot of teams medically flunked him. I don't believe it to necessarily be true. They didn't ask him to come back to the combine recheck. He probably does have a ding because he had a neck injury last year. that prevented him. He only played 6 games. So he could have some medical. And, again, those are things that we're not exposed to, so we don't know for sure. But I'm going to go with the fact that I don't think that he has – that he's – a lot of teams have medically crossing him off their list. He'd be a good fit for the Cowboys. You know, they need a guy like that on their team. I think he'd be a good fit for a lot of teams. He could fit in both 3-4 or 4-3. He only has 1 year starting experience, but that 1 year he had 141 tackles and he made plays. I think he's somewhat of a project, though. Like, still needs to grow. He still needs to figure out how to play the position, continue to learn how to diagnose plays. But I think he's going to have a pretty good future. I see him as like a Bernardrick McKinney from the Texans. That's kind of a comparison that I like to make for him. But again, for the Cowboys' sake, if you want to look at that, I really do think that they're going to have to go receiver in the first round. They might go receiver rounds 1 and 2. But, you know, I actually think that Leighton Vander Esch will be off the board by the time the Cowboys pick. And, you know, we'll talk about that in our mock.
Yep, that's coming together. It'll be out soon. 7th round and projected priority free agent. So Jack B. also asks, I'd like to know your thoughts on Frank Ragnow and his ability to move to guard. And, well, the simple answer to that is Frank Ragnow could play either center or guard. Moving the guard wouldn't be an issue for him. And, you know, if you saw our rankings and saw Deron Payne in the 2nd round and maybe raised your eyebrows a little bit, go watch Deron Payne versus Frank Ragnow, and you'll see why we have Payne in the 2nd round. But, yes, he can play center or guard, and he's a solid 2nd round pick. We're going to move on to Oscar here. So Oscar says, which player do you think is best suited for the Colts at 6? And this is saying if the big three are gone, and he's right on point with who the big three are. That's Quentin Nelson, Saquon Barkley, and Bradley Chubb. Well, I'd have to say I think one of those guys is going to be there. So I'm going to assume that we're talking about a trade down here. And when we talk about a trade down, the most popular player mentioned with the Colts is Roquan Smith. I know they're looking for some new linebackers there, and, you know, Roquan Smith can really cover the field, go sideline to sideline, so he makes sense. They move down. Another player who, you know, I guess if those three were gone, is Denzel Ward. I think he's the best cornerback in the draft. You can't go wrong taking him, especially, you know, Rashawn Melvin's gone now. So I like those two guys there, Roquan Smith and Denzel Ward. I think if you don't get Saquon Barkley in the 1st round, I think the guy to look at in the 2nd round is Kerryon Johnson. And why Kerryon Johnson over all of those other guys? Well, specifically for the Colts, Marlon Mack looks talented, but he can't pass protect. Hey, they need to get a back in there who can pass protect. And right now, Nick Chubb can't do that. Rashad Penny can't do that. Ronald Jones can't do that. Not to say that they won't be able to do it in the future, but you can't bring Andrew Luck back after this whole debacle that's happened the past over a year now and all of a sudden have him out there getting killed because you've got Marlon Mack and a rookie running back who can't pass back. So those are my thoughts on the Colts. Ray, do you have any real quick thoughts about the Colts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that even if one of those guys are there, I still think the Colts are going to explore to trade down and pick up some additional picks. Their defense has quite a few holes. So I really wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, move down from 6 again, even if Barkley, Nelson, or Chubb are there. And I think that that's the right move.
Okay. Good job, Ray. And thank you so much for all the questions that you sent us. We tried to jam as much as we possibly could into this 30 minutes right here. And thank you very, very much for, you know, supporting us by getting our draft board. We'll probably have a minor update before the draft where things are coming together. We're working hard on this mock draft right now. And if you're listening and you don't have the draft board, it's available. You can go to my Twitter page at NFL Rough Draft, and it's pinned right to the top. I hope you guys found this valuable. I love that we have so many really smart people and educated people on the NFL draft that are, you know, asking us questions. You know, it's really humbling. So, Ray, great job tonight. People who sent us questions, great job, and we'll catch you next time.